This week's episode of the Dive Podcast is brought to you by Neil Kelly, a leader in the design, installation, and maintenance of residential solar energy systems in Oregon. Visit neilkelly.com/solar to learn more and to schedule a complimentary solar assessment, or call them at 503-288-7461. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show. It's Saturday, March 19th, and this is episode 63 of The Dive. Today we're discussing Willamette Week's cover story, Have You Heard? One of these Republicans could be your next governor, with political journalist Rachel Monahan. When I first moved to Portland in 2006, the state's politics weren't really on my radar. In fact, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to politics at all beyond the city level, which I recognize as privileged. Over the years, though, I've gotten to know Oregon on a whole other level. And for me, personally, it sometimes feels like there's Portland and then there's Oregon. Like, Portland has this progressive population with pride flags on every block and heart-rending protest art on the street corners and weirdos who just climb trees in the park to play their flute all afternoon. But in the smaller towns and whistle-stop villages of Oregon, the vibe is idyllic, but in another kind of way. What would a Republican-governed Oregon look like? Would it look like Newburgh, where educators are banned from hanging Pride or Black Lives Matter banners? Or would Portland's progressive sheen be bolstered by tangible prosperity for all the residents? Well, as Rachel advised, we're hiring someone for a job, not marrying them. Qualifications matter. Unless you've been caught wife-swapping, then all bets are off. Our interview is coming right up, but first, here's a snapshot of the headlines of the week. Of the 60 members of the Oregon House sworn in last year, 26 will not run again for their seats this year. Lawmakers give up seats for all sorts of reasons, but there's opportunity for both parties. Nobody wants to become a police officer in Portland, but prosecutors say they're burning out too, overwhelmed by an average of 21 shootings per week. On Tuesday, the first satellite built in Oregon launched into space from Kodiak, Alaska. The satellite was built from scratch by Portland State University students who are part of the school's Aerospace Society. More than 24 students worked on the project for 5 years. Congratulations, y'all. Jordan Terry's documentary, Grandma's Roses, premiered at the Portland Museum of Art this Friday. Terry says of his grandmother, "This was a woman who, through her wit and charm, convinced a white banker to give his first home loan to a black family. She protested and marched for civil rights in a town so small, such acts put one's livelihood at risk." Tickets for virtual screenings are available at grandmasfilm.com. And if you still have one, call your grandmother. Our favorite things to swallow this week are the tasting menu at Cocina Mexicana, Republica, and local drafts at Record Shop / Music Venue / Event Space, Turn, Turn, Turn. Follow up on all these stories and more at wweek.com. Now, back to the pod. So, Rachel, how
nice
are you?
Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you, too.
Nice to meet you.
I'm a fangirling a little bit because I am such a fan of your work. And this article was harrowing. I'm agnostic now, but I kind of grew up evangelical, so I have an idea of what those prayer services can look like. So all the leading Republican candidates for governor at this event, at this prayer service, Republican rally sort of at the River Church, which is Lou Wooten's church. And I know that he has a reputation. What was his sermon like?
I don't know if he counts it as a proper sermon, but among the things I remember him saying was he was kind of explaining to people why there would be politics in a church, and he talked about Obama on the campaign trail going to Black churches. And so there is a rich history of politicians going to churches.
Sure.
But he said in his sermon that they are not a church that is bound by nonprofit rules not to engage in politics. They haven't set up their church that way. So he does make political endorsements himself. So that was interesting. And, well, I don't remember him saying Kate Brown's name directly. He did talk about, now you're going to see my ignorance of the Bible, but he did. I grew up Jewish, so I should know these things too, but he did quote the Bible in terms of, like, you know, God seeing to it that the people have righteous rulers and getting rid of bad rulers. And it was clearly an indication of, it seemed to be it was more than a nudge that he was hoping to see Kate Brown go. I mean, she will go because this is the end of her term, but that was what I was listening for. Whether he spoke on other things, I can't actually tell you because okay. I was there as a politics reporter to listen.
Yeah. So.
And it was officially the Marion County Republicans forum on for gubernatorial candidates. This was my first reporting trip in some time. And so that itself was notable to me. And again, you know, we're all there now, but this was last month and nobody was masking that I saw. Nobody but myself was masking.
Really?
Yes. It's hundreds and hundreds of people sitting in pews together. I had quite the mom response to it. Like, I am personally beyond some of my own fear of the pandemic with vaccines and with my daughter being vaccinated, fully vaccinated. My heart goes out to those parents who cannot get their young kids vaccinated, but I'm beyond my fear a bit, at least for myself and my immediate household. And so I kind of had a mom response to listening to some of the adults cough in the audience. I was like, oh dear, who's going to take you to the hospital if you really have a problem? Like, because the, you know, COVID denial, or at least the denial of the serious elements of it, is prevalent. Mm-hmm. So
it wasn't just the congregation then in attendance.
There were people who were there definitely to make up their mind about who they were going to vote for in the primary.
Town hall style.
Yeah. I mean, there was no audience questions, and this is something that didn't get in the story. I'm quite peeved at my editors for taking out a line I had of the story, but I had a spoiler alert, so there was no spoiler in the story. But in church, Stan Pulliam did not get asked about his swinging days in Portland.
Oh.
There was no allusion to it, no, like, no reference to it, no praying for Stancil.
Oh, I'm not shocked at all, but I'm a little bit gagged about it. That's such a hot topic. Oh, well, okay.
I mean, there was no even reference to, like, the way that some, I mean, I feel like, bless his heart, Dan Pulliam went sex positive in his response to being asked about swinging with his wife.
Yeah.
He said something that I think Portlanders can identify with, which is, I tried something. I was at a point in my marriage, like, I wanted to see how this worked for us. It did not. We moved on. And I did not hear a moment of regret, though there's definitely a lot of political spin around saying that he doesn't do that anymore, so we can forgive him for that in the past. But he did not, in my understanding of what he said to us, pull a George W. Bush and say, I was a sinner in the days and now I'm not. So I find it really interesting because, from a political perspective, because I truly believe that Stan, and I kind of identify with this, my own politics, I probably sit in my own little, Venn diagram of one, but I have this imaginary Venn diagram of like Stan, pro-life and sex positive former swinger. And I feel like only Stan and possibly his wife are in that little.
Oh my gosh.
Political arena. But anyway, his campaign is still ongoing.
That's a lot to think about. The idea of him presenting as sex positive, we've moved past this, but there's still like this. So if we are imagining an Oregon that is, that has a Republican governor, I'm immediately thinking about like what's happening in Florida with the Don't Say Gay. And I'm thinking about what's happening in Texas and I'm just like straight up criminalizing trans youth. If, are we going to be facing down these same fights if a Republican is elected?
You know, that is an interesting question. And that has not, I have not heard anything. That is a good point. I have not heard anything like that. The political position most anathema to Portland liberals is probably the, on culture, on values kind of issues is probably a pro-life position. Which I actually, as a matter of fact, don't think is much under threat in Oregon, unless there's unless the Democrats completely wipe out in elections in the legislature too. Mm-hmm. But no, I have not heard anything about an attack on gay rights, on trans youth, anything like that from the Republicans, but I may not have been in the right rooms.
Mm-hmm. I wonder about that because Oregon was one of the, I think the first or one of the first states to do same-sex reassignment surgeries. And so there's, that culture runs so deep here. The thought of, like, Republicans in charge, that was the first thing I thought about was, oh my gosh, protect the kids! Oh my gosh, protect the kids! What are we gonna do?
Right. And that's interesting because I do, like, they are not, that when in speaking to the base, that is not the issue they're going to. There is talk of critical race theory. If I am to imagine what the general election campaign will look like, it will be fought around crime and inflation and economic issues. I think they may have lost enough in Oregon to have some understanding of what issues are just like off the table, but maybe I'm wrong. Like, and Pulliam, if we go back to Pulliam, who is notable in part because I think he had it in some regards, I think he was the front runner until our story on him. He came out for gay rights when he was.
He's an ally.
Mm-hmm. Or says he is.
Or says he is. I'm thinking about this, you know, like, this is possible. It's possible that we're going to elect a Republican governor. But I also know that Oregon is a city-state, which I understand means that most of our voting population is in Portland. But then the landscape of Portland has changed so much. Do you think that a lot of that population growth is red?
I mean, I think that a lot of, I think the reason that Republicans have a chance is that a lot of people are very unhappy with the way things are going. And I think that a lot of voters are not Republican, they aren't registered Republican or Democrat. They just have voting habits that align. Usually, even unaffiliated voters usually vote one way or the other these days. Our politics are pretty polarized, mm-hmm. whether we're registered with a party or not. I think what changes that a bit in this election is that people are unhappy with the state of things. I would say everyone reasonably is pretty unhappy about having gone through a pandemic for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And now with Democrats in charge, both in Oregon and Washington, D.C., the problems politically accrue to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Homelessness and housing remain a top issue in Portland. There have been a lot of policy steps to address that without visible results yet. And so that means that there's an issue. Mm-hmm. I think that inflation, particularly how much it costs to get to work with gas, yeah, is going to be a real issue that I think is a very, and I would also put crime in this category. They're both really difficult issues for Democrats.
Sure.
I could get into the reasons for that, but yeah, I think those spell trouble alone for the Democrats.
Can you get into it a little bit?
Sure, let me try. I just think that, well, let me step back for a second. It's a well-known phenomenon in politics that there's generally a something of a backlash against the party that controls the White House in the first midterm election. So 2 years into a new president, is a good time to be the opposition party. And so that's the election we have. So that's kind of the backdrop. The other thing is that Oregon governor races have been very, very close for at least two decades. Like even though we're a pretty blue state, Biden won by 16 points here. Our governor's races are 4 points apart.
Whoa.
Four points is a lot when you're trying to come up with those votes. But it is it's not 16.
Yeah.
So that's the backdrop. And then if you add in this election cycle where you have a Democratic president, polling on Democrats nationally is low. As of November, we had the most unpopular governor in the country. And then you add in some issues where I think there are some difficult answers. There are some unpopular answers that Democrats give on gas prices,
yeah,
and inflation. And I think Republicans might have the edge on those. I mean, I think at the moment in polling, they have the edge on handling the economy.
Mm-hmm. Of the 7 candidates that you profiled, mm-hmm, was there anyone that raised green flags to you, red flags, anything that we should be particularly wary of?
I mean, is like, if you're asking me to give you the betting odds, I think the race is likely down to, I don't know. It's down to 4 probably. But I could be wrong. I think that Pulliam it won't win if I had to guess today. Bud Pierce is the former, he ran against Kate Brown in 2016. He still has the greatest name recognition, but I have my doubts about whether he'll be elected this time. And maybe partly because he was the nominee before, and Republicans at least are campaigning, looking to be seen as an outsider or somebody who can fight the Democrats. And so if he's lost, I think that's a mark against him. But again, he's the most popular. Christine Drazen, the former House Speaker, I think she's one of the leading contenders. She is an outsider to politics as a former House Minority Leader, but she is also a good communicator, professional in politics, and is in contention. And then the other two I would mention are Bridget Burton, who is a conservative who's done a lot in conservative politics but hasn't run for office in a very long time. Bob Tiernan, who's a former legislator and a former head of the Republican Party in Oregon.
What should we leave the listeners with?
I would say that I would leave the listeners just with this idea that politics in Oregon is a little more up in the air this year. And as a reporter, I would urge them to follow our political coverage to actually learn about the candidates. I guess one more thought I have is, like, you know, personally, I've definitely thrown protest votes myself in my time personally. But I think one of the most amazing, you know, life-changing experiences as a voter and covering politics and also working for Willamette Week is sitting on our sitting for endorsements and contemplating that one of these people will actually be your governor. And we often choose between the best of a bad option, as I tell my kid when she's unhappy with her choices in life. I advocate for the kind of voting that is informed and mature. You're hiring someone for a job, you're not marrying them.
Thank you very much for your time today, Rachel. I appreciate you and all the work that you do.
Thank you very much. It was very nice to talk to you.
It was nice to talk to you. For the first time. Totally. I can't wait to do it again. All right. See you next time. Bye. Bye.
My guest, Rachel Monahan, for joining me on this week's edition of The Dive. And thank you for joining me as well. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye!